Good afternoon, everybody. Hello. Welcome to We Met Online. Great visitor experiences start with Google. I am Sarah Gibb Millspaugh. I'm on the UUA's outreach team with my colleague Carrie McDonald. And I've been doing this work of helping our movement and our congregations better articulate who we are, what we do, and why it matters for the last 3 years of my ministry. And I'm about to move on to a new role on June 30th. I'll be finishing up with the outreach team and moving on to the Pacific Western region as field staff. So any of you who live in the West, which is a huge chunk of the country, I'll be working with you and looking forward to that. Carrie, take it away.
Wonderful. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you for choosing us as your final workshop slot for General Assembly 2016. We're going to talk today about a lot of ways that you can understand the visitor experience in your congregation better. And we, of course, recognize that that doesn't start the minute you walk in the door, but it starts far before that. And if any of you were at my Outreach 101 workshop yesterday? Okay, good chunk. So I think that you will hear some similar themes to what we talked about then, but we're also going to dive much deeper into some specific tools that you can use to improve the visitor experience in your congregation. So, most of us know our congregations inside and out. We know the committees, we know the course of the year and the celebrations that are special to us. We know the people. We know the history. But how many of us know our congregations from the outside in? We spend our time as leaders inside our congregations, and you are a leader, whether or not anyone has told you that, because you're here at General Assembly learning about great practices to share with your congregation. Right, so we are all leaders. We all have something to offer, and we spend a lot of time getting to know the context of our leadership inside our congregations. But the truth is that our congregations, of course, exist in communities and neighborhoods and cities and states and countries, and that all of the important issues and dynamics and the wonderful people and the fabulous opportunities and the draining challenges that are in those communities that our congregations sit in are just as important to understand and to interact with and to factor into your leadership as all of those things that go on inside your congregation. So we're going to talk about how to do that. This is what outreach is about. Yesterday, in my workshop, we talked about how outreach is about listening, first and foremost. It's not just about reaching out, but seeing ourselves from the outside in. That's what listening is understanding perspectives that are not our own, perspectives of people who are not members, perspectives of people who have something that we have something that they might value. We have something to offer them spiritually, ethically, morally. And we need to find ways to help them connect with that based on who they are and what they care about. We talked about specifically a spectrum of relationship, which is to say that for a long time we've thought about membership, right? You report your membership numbers to the UUA every single year. Please tell me you report your membership numbers. Okay, all right. So we think about membership, and that's the number that counts. That's the number that we've said, this is what it means to be a congregation. You have members, and those who are members are Unitarian Universalists, and those who have not signed the book and turned in their annual pledge form, we don't really keep track of you that much. Right? But the reality is that I don't know anyone for whom signing the membership book was the end of their experience with Unitarian Universalism. In fact, there is a whole range of ways in which people right now do, in fact, get connected to your congregation, right? And that starts not the moment that they walk in the door, but it starts on the left of this spectrum of faithful relationship here when they find out about Unitarian Universalism. Some of us grew up Unitarian Universalists, but most of us did not. Who did not grow up Unitarian Universalist, right? Look around. Right? So it was the same percentage in the room yesterday, and it's the same percentage in every room of Unitarian Universalists just about that I talked to, because we're a faith of spiritual incomers, right? So that means that for most of us, we went through learning about Unitarian Universalism, right? Something piqued our interest. Then we explored a little bit. Maybe we went to an event at a church. Maybe we got really inspired by some public witness that a congregation had done. And we had to go through that before wanting to make the commitment of membership, which is maybe in the middle. And then, once we joined, we tried to find ways to be more engaged. Maybe we joined a small group ministry or taught RE. And many of us have then become fully integrated leaders in our congregation. And so, when we think about the spectrum of faithful relationship and all the realities of how people today interact with our congregations, we know it's important to pay attention to each piece of that spectrum. And when we talk about outreach, we're specifically talking about the left side here, how we get those folks who are, how we build relationships with those folks who maybe know us a little bit or have heard about us, how we get them more interested in what we have to offer, how we offer things that are valuable to them. So that's what we mean when we talk about outreach, is how to build those first stage relationships with people. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So We also said yesterday that when you want to build relationships with people, because this is a relational faith, that you cannot build relationships in general. You must build relationships in specific. You have to build specific relationships with specific groups of people. And sometimes we talk about those as audiences, people who are not members, right? Folks that you're interacting with. And so we're going to ask these questions today. How do you understand the people you want to build relationships with? How do you understand what their experience is, what your church looks like from the outside in, what their goals and challenges are, and what you might be able to do that can speak to that? We all believe that we come from congregations that save lives, that transform our communities. That's why we stick around. And so how can we help understand how others feel about our congregation so that we can open up that possibility for transformation with them? How do you define the group of folks that you're working with, right? I know we like to be as broad in our acceptance as we possibly can, but the truth is, we're not for everybody, right? We're not for everybody. We're not for people who are homophobic and transphobic and racist, explicitly racist, and who want to tear down the values that we invest in and that we commit to. We're for people who care about the same values as we are. Now, we are definitely about reaching people for whom those values feel different and look different. Yes? Yes? But we need to understand who it is that we feel can benefit from what we have to offer in our community, and then we can understand how to speak in the language that they will understand. How do you earn the attention of the people that you are trying to reach? We don't deserve it automatically just by being awesome UUs, as sad as that is. I know. Right? How do you earn the attention of people who you feel you have something to offer? And then how do you build that relationship to keep their attention over time and make them want to be involved in your congregation? This is not about marketing. This is not about coercion. This is about building relationship and listening and offering and inviting and finding beautiful ways to connect with folks who can benefit from our saving message of compassion and justice. Sarah?
And some amazing and powerful tools come to us from the field of user experience. How many of you have heard of user experience, or UX? It's this field that comes from web development, product development. You know, companies are using this to try to figure out what it feels like to engage with their work. It gets us into some of the deeper psychological motivations that people have when they are engaging with us. And, you know, for our purposes, we can think of our users as people along that spectrum of engagement that Carrie described. But when we're talking outreach, we're talking about the user experience of those who are toward the beginning, the people that we are seeking to establish some kind of a relationship with. The field of user experience involves doing research and developing ideas and measurement. And the tool that we're going to delve into more with this are personas. But first, let's talk a little bit about what is an experience. So how do we experience the world? We experience the world by seeing and touching and tasting and smelling and taking in everything from our senses, all of our input. And it comes up into our brains through our nerves, through our organs, and it tells us information. It's a combination of everything that's going into our brains with everything that's already in our brains that turns into an experience. And a big part of our experience is our emotional response. Now, this is a different way of thinking about how to introduce our faith. You know, I grew up Unitarian Universalist, a very humanist congregation that was about, you know, maybe if we could just convince everyone logically, how do we join? They'll see the light of Unitarian Universalism through logical reasoning. But here we look more into the emotions. Like, what are the emotions that make someone want to affiliate with us, to identify with us? What are the emotions that draw people into our community or not have them be drawn in, even if they share our values? Emotions come in many different forms and colors and flavors. This is Plutchik's Wheel of Emotions here, which describes many of the kinds of emotions that we can have. We can have a feeling of amazement, feelings of trust, interest, acceptance, serenity, joy, the kinds of feelings that we want to evoke. And we might not even realize it, but perhaps we are evoking frustration, anger, feelings of not belonging by the things that we're doing. Last year, I wrote a blog about some of this at the congregation that I served until a few years ago. We recognized by doing some membership work that before people even got in the door on Sunday morning and heard our intro saying, everyone is welcome here no matter where you come from, etc., you are welcome, we are so happy to have you here, they had to go through this experience of parking in the parking lot and not having any idea which door to go through, and then having to rattle a couple of doors and try to figure out if they're locked or unlocked, and then go through this funky door that actually looked like it was the entrance to the trash shed, but it was actually the back entrance to the church, you know, old buildings. But we were giving them a negative emotional experience before they even got in and heard any of the carefully chosen words we had to say. So emotions are something that we really need to pay attention to in user experience, because emotions make the connection. Emotions are what are going to pull people into relationship with us, make them want to affiliate with us. And it is the foundation of our decision making. We're not going to be filling out a form about whether we agree with all seven of the principles. We are going to be joining and getting closer and closer to a community because we feel those positive emotions, because those emotions make our communities sticky. Now, Carrie has a few examples of some of the graphic ways that we can engage or not engage emotions.
We're going to talk a lot about online media in this workshop, and so I want to give you some examples so you see what we mean about emotion. And just to give you a very unemotional take on emotion, there's a lot of research that shows that what people are searching for in religious communities, why they show up, why they look into your congregation to begin with, is really about spiritual emotional longing. And the reason that they stay connected may be because they agree and because they find friends and community, but a lot of it is far less rational than we might think, and a lot of it may be far less conscious than we understand. And so the emotional connection is really where we're working. That's what we got to work with in terms of trying to reach new folks with what we have to offer. So I picked two shareable images, right? You've probably seen these kinds of things floating around. You take a quote, you put it on a picture, and we hope that thousands of people see them on Facebook. There's nothing wrong with these images, right? And in fact, they both depict our beautiful second principle, the importance of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. But I'll tell you that I look at a lot of church Facebook pages, and a lot of them share things like this, and almost none of them have any interaction with images like this. Because there's very little emotional connection that is going into these images. There's not a lot of context. They're not related to anything going on in someone's lives. The language is very meaningful to us, but probably a little unexpected or oddly specific if you don't know about the UU7 principles. And so compare this kind of shareable image. Take a quote, put it on a picture, beautiful sunset, maybe a candle. Batteries are dying in the clicker. This happened last workshop with this image. This image was shared in August of 2014 by the UUA's Facebook page. It's a quote from our president, Peter Morales. It's a little long of a quote, but it's a beautiful quote. And he says, "Ferguson is not about Ferguson. It is about the systematic dehumanizing of people all over America. As Unitarian Universalists, we have faith that it need not be this way. We can create a world that is accepting, fair, loving, and diverse. In the short term, let us stand on the side of love with those seeking healing and some measure of justice. In the long term, let us rededicate ourselves to the work of building a world where events like those in Ferguson are unthinkable." This image just grabs you right off the bat. This is from a group called the Overpass Light Brigade that does stuff like this all over the country. This image was created right as the events in Ferguson were unfolding, so it was timely. It was related to what people were talking about right now on social media. How many people do you think saw this picture? We shared it on our Facebook page. How many people do you think saw this picture? Shout out a number. 50,000? 100,000?
3 million.
3 million, I wish. All right. 130,000. 130,000 people saw this in a matter of, you know, a day or two, right? 9,000 people interacted with this image. Now, this image didn't take that much longer to create than the other one, but we created it at the right time. We found a compelling image. We used language that grabs people on an emotional level, on a heart level. I mean, I can just, even just looking at it, I can feel that, right? So, you know, awesome shareable images on social media is not the only key to outreach. I don't want to imply that, but I want to use this as an example of how powerful we can be when we make that emotional connection.
So with personas, as I mentioned, they are a tool that we can use to make that emotional connection in a more specific way. Because sometimes we have national events, like the events in Ferguson that image was made for, that are affecting people nationally, and people are going to, people of a variety of backgrounds, a variety of standpoints in life are going to resonate with it and identify with it. But we can get very specific, and in the outreach team, we advise congregations to get specific about who you want to attract. And we're going to share with you some personas that we developed for reaching out to young activists, LGBTQ families, and interfaith families. And these personas are being used by some of our congregations who are testing out ways of promoting themselves to specific audiences. Because the personas, they are fictional characters. They're actual people that you invent, but they're based on demographic data. They're based on the audiences of the people that you are trying to form a relationship with. And they're a powerful user experience tool for connecting with the emotions and the needs that the people already have, people in your community, for us on the inside developing empathy with those who are not yet with us. Also, they're a tool for evaluation, and we're going to see a lot of that here in this workshop with the examples that I'll share with you. And a tool for action. So you can use a persona, take them through your website, for example, and then revise your website so that that persona is going to have a more positive emotional experience engaging with you. So we will introduce you to our three personas, and we will follow their journeys as they interact with the UU Church of Berkeley in Kensington, California, our wonderful guinea pig congregation. They have been working diligently on reworking their outreach and coming up with creative ideas for reaching different target audiences, and have had a recent event where they sought to connect with young activists, LGBTQ families, and multi-faith families. So what
they did give us permission to use this.
They did give us permission. Yes, thanks for clarifying that. We will introduce you to Waleed, Emma, and David. So meet Waleed, and I'll show you. With these personas, you'll see there's different aspects that you sketch out the personas, and we have worksheets you can use to develop these for yourself as well. Waleed is a gay man. He was raised Muslim. He's married to a man who's a former Catholic, and they have adopted multiracial children. He's also a working professional. And in his life, Carrie, could you do the next slide? He has some major goals and challenges, and two of them are that he really wants his kids to be loved and accepted for who they are, and that they have a lot of things in their lives that could lead them to grow up feeling marginal or being oppressed, and he wants them to have a place of love and acceptance. And he very much wants to feel less stressed and less isolated. He has values and fears that he carries with him. He highly values the worth of all people, and he feels this was core to the family values he grew up with and core to the family values he practices today. He believes in paying it forward and being generous for all the ways that people have helped him. He wants to give back and give forward. He also does want to be affirmed in his full self, which doesn't happen in that many communities for him. He's living with fear of the anti-Muslim, anti-gay, anti-black backlash and actions that are going on in this country. And he has more fears for safety than he's had in a long time. Now, Waleed is not necessarily looking for a congregation. People are not out there church shopping or religion shopping in the way that they used to be. More and more people are comfortable just being nuns, N-O-N-E-S, not identifying with a religion in particular. And Waleed and his family are kind of nuns at this point. And he doesn't really know what he would do in a, quote, church. Like, it's kind of cross-cultural for him. He grew up going to the mosque periodically, but this whole church notion, that's a different culture for him. And also, Sunday mornings is family waffle time, and it's like the only time in the week that they don't have to get up and go, and they can spend some time together. So he's not looking for a church, but he knows he wants to make a difference. He knows he wants to connect. He knows he wants to find a place where his family can feel accepted and loved, where he can feel safe and affirmed, and where they can grow together. So he's on Facebook one day, and he sees this on his wall. It says, "Express your values through art and marching. Join together for an all-ages rainbow Black Lives Matter sign-making party on June 12th. Then gather again on June 26th to carry our signs through the San Francisco at this year's San Francisco Pride Parade with Black Lives Matter as its theme, sponsored by the UU Church of Berkeley." Wow. He's like, he thinks, huh, wow, they're having a sign-making party. Hey, all ages. You know, I have some friends who are Unitarian Universalists. They really like it. I'm going to check this out. So he clicks on the event. But why does he click? Not because he's looking for the UU thing. It says something about him and his needs. A multiracial LGBTQ family. He wants family activities for justice. He's not looking for church right now. So then he goes and explores the event, and he says, this looks neat, but gosh, zero interested, zero going, zero invited. So maybe, you know, maybe in real life, Waleed just leaves there. But this persona in our story, he clicks to see the Facebook page of the church just to learn a little bit more about it. And he sees the screenshot here, and he's like, oh, okay, well, this is interesting. Hey, they got 4.6 stars. They got these kids up there. I'm going to take a little bit of a look. So he clicks on About, the About part of the Facebook page. And then he's like, oh, kind of looks like it's in the middle of nowhere on the map. But that, okay, I guess that's actually not that far from us. And then it says on the side, it says, ask for UUCB's price range. He's like, price range? That's weird. He's kind of puzzled, but he thinks maybe that's just a blip. And he's like, okay, well, how churchy is this church? I want to know how churchy this church is. So he clicks on the website link. And up comes this picture. Churchy? Well, yes, he thinks it looks kind of churchy. He wonders, okay, gosh, am I going to fit in? Will I connect? Is this Christian? My friend says it's not Christian. Oh, look, and then he sees down in the corner, it's the pride sign. That would be really great for my family. So he clicks on that. And here's the event webpage, and it says it's from 9:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. in the social hall. And he's like, wait a minute, when? That's kind of a long event. And then he reads on and he says, it's during the minister's thank you party. Wait, okay, and I have to email a member of the church to sign up. So how's he feeling? He's kind of like, I'm a little concerned here. He feels some anxiety, some fear, and he concludes, okay, this isn't for me. This is an event for church people. I'm not going to go. But we talked to the church in Berkeley, and that actually it was a mistake, the 9:30 to 1:30 thing, because that was the time the social hall was reserved, not the time the actual event was. So, that's how churches work. So they changed that. But they also created an Eventbrite invitation. And so click on that. So let's pretend he encounters the Eventbrite invitation instead of the thing where he has to email a member of the church. And it says very clearly that the church is getting together. It has the time. It says it's all ages. He can, like, click and add it to the calendar. It's free. He can register without having to contact a stranger. Perfect. He feels a feeling of interest in the congregation and satisfaction. He's really interested in this event. This is a great thing for him to check it out. So he closes his site. He feels open-minded about the congregation and very curious about what this event is going to be like. And he thinks, heck, at least if it doesn't work out, it'll at least be a free lunch for the family and, a nice little trip into the hills. But, hey, it could be fun. So let's talk. What did we learn from Waleed's user experience journey? And we have a lot of people here, so I invite you to just turn to your neighbor for a minute, say a few things about what you learned, and then we'll ask you to shout out some things after that, and we can repeat them in the microphone. What did you learn from this user experience journey? Or maybe you're done. Okay. We'll just take maybe 10 shout-outs. What did you learn? Yes? Oh, okay. How he came across... That's right. I didn't mention that. They paid to promote this on Facebook, so it showed up on the walls of... on the Facebook homepages of people like who had checked off being interested in LGBTQ stuff, Black Lives Matter stuff in their area. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, the image we came back to, no, it didn't give information that it was also a party for the outgoing senior minister. Okay, so what did we learn? Some things. Shout them out. People have, if they have a lot of obstacles to overcome. Yeah, to go someplace new. Yeah. Minor things can add up to not going. Yes. Simple is better. Yes. Too much information is dangerous. Yes.
The picture of the church was more of a hindrance than the picture of the children.
The picture of the church was more of a hindrance than the picture of the children. Yes, in that case. Yes. Yes, have the original link he went to for the event with 000 should have been Eventbrite from the beginning. And that is one reason why our office is recommending congregations use Eventbrite and integrate it into Facebook rather than have a separate Facebook event, because they can look depressing when people don't want to publicly say on Facebook that they're going to a public event. Eventbrite is a service where you can buy tickets. For free events that nonprofits are running, it doesn't cost any money. There's a small fee for events that cost money, but it's a full service that could plug into things. Do you want to add something to that?
I just wanted to say there's an email sign-up sheet coming around, and so if you do add your email, we'll send you the slides, which will also include links to some of the things that we're talking about today.
Yeah. Okay, two more learnings. Abby.
We should always be thinking about who the target audience
Yes, always be thinking about who the target audience is and what their experience is. You know, whether you have to register or not. Yeah, that's a good question. Sorry, I saw the hand in the back before.
Have some of your members immediately like something that you posted on Facebook.
Have your members immediately like something. Exactly. Your members are a powerful tool for events. You can ask people in the church announcements on Sunday. You know, you can say, please go like this, share this, promote this, because your own people are the best tool for spreading the word. All right, Carrie's going to introduce us to another persona.
All right, let's meet Emma. Emma is a female in her early mid-20s. She's a young, progressive-oriented, leftist kind of activist. She's a professional working in the social sector progressive arena. She does have a college degree. She grew up Christian, but now has a pretty wide-ranging spirituality, likes to dabble, likes to explore the range of the wisdom traditions of the world. She identifies as queer, and she's a transracial adoptee. The goals and challenges that Emma's facing, the first is that, frankly, Emma's getting a little depressed about the state of the world. And that's easy to do, because looking at atrocity after atrocity, she realizes that what she really wants is to ground herself in humanity's positive potential, and she's struggling to find what that is. She wants to be able to hold on to that hope to fuel the work that she's doing for change. Secondarily, Emma wants to be around people who get it. She doesn't want to be fighting to figure out whether she needs to be putting up her guard or correcting some microaggressions that are happening. She just wants to be able to be with people who get it more of the time and affirm the identity that she has carved out for herself over the years. She wants to define herself by claiming who she fully is. She doesn't want other people defining her for herself, right? As she moves through the world, people assign a lot of labels to her, and Emma says, I want to be able to choose who I am. And that's hard to do. It's hard to carve out enough space for yourself and for your social life and all the ways that give you life and energy when you're working so hard. So she's got a hard time trying to find space for her social life in addition to the work and the volunteering that she's doing. Emma's a doer. She's strongly believes in the old universalist idea of the God-given worth of every human being, that each person is a child of God. A passionate advocate for the full spectrum of human rights wherever she can be, a lot of her values really do align with Unitarian Universalism through inclusion, respect, responsibility. She loves intersection and interconnection. That's stuff she talks about all the time. But she's also, as we said, she's afraid of being pigeonholed. She's afraid people are only going to see one part of her and not allow her full self to be shown. She's the adoptee, the transracial adoptee, the queer woman, right? The activist. Why are you so angry all the time, Emma? She wants to be able to be the things that she is, but she also just wants to be Emma. She's very attuned to those efforts to tokenize and pigeonhole her, even though she knows they just come from the best places sometimes. So she's become wary of some older adults in her community because she feels like they don't get it. And as she's been to protests and events, she's seen that sometimes younger folks are having a better time grappling with the world that she's seeing. She's getting frustrated about how often she has to educate folks, particularly about issues she really cares about, like modern-day slavery and human trafficking. And so, you know, if she is thinking about a UU congregation, then if she feels like that's going to be about trying to have a lot of conversations with people and explaining and educating them, she's not really into that. She does have some fond memories of the Methodist congregation of her childhood and how oriented they were towards families, but she doesn't have children at the moment, and she's not partnered, and she's not so sure whether queer people are welcome there at all, really. So Emma goes to the Pride Parade. And she goes with her friends, and she's been feeling some despair about the state of the world because, you know, she doesn't live under a rock. And especially because of the rise of the Trump campaign and because of the anti-trans bathroom measures that have been going on across this country, and the police brutality and racism that she sees in her own community in the Bay Area. So she goes to Pride for that sense of inspiration, to feel hope, feel alive. She's gotten a little annoyed with Pride recently, frankly. A lot of corporate sponsorship. But this year they're working with Black Lives Matter, and she feels really great about that. And so she sees the UU congregation of Berkeley marching with their banner, and they're happy looking, and there's a variety of folks there. Some of them look straight, some of them look bi, maybe some of them are trans. There's older folks and younger folks, and there's a good mix of people. There's a young adult who has a T-shirt on it that says, "Got Hope," and hands her this flyer, which says, "Brave souls wanted, Black Lives Matter and UU, dare to live with compassion, acceptance, and reverence. Come walk with us. Ceasefire Lifelines to Healing walks every Friday night at 7 p.m. in Richmond for Witness to Ending Violence." So she's looking at that and says, I kind of like the look of this. You know, it's colorful, it's bold, and it sounds like these folks are doing something. So she sticks it in her bag, gets on the BART. The BART is the transit in the Bay Area, and heads on home. It's kind of a long BART ride. So she pulls out that flyer, and she pulls out her phone, because really, half of web traffic in folks at Emma's age is happening on their phones. And she types in UUCB.org, and it takes her right here to the UUCB homepage. And she says, oh, geez, at least they have a decent website, right? And it's smartphone responsive, so she can actually read it. So she's looking at it, she sees the social justice banner, she can't really see who's in this picture, but oh, there's that Black Lives Matter sign, so that's good. She likes that. They've got these social media channels up top: Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, Instagram, Google+. All right, maybe they're with it a little bit. She scrolls down a little bit and sees Next Service, a shared ministry. Shared ministry. I wonder who they're sharing it with. Do they share their minister with another congregation? Is that what this is? She's not sure. She scrolls down. She sees the sermon description. Ministry is no longer an act provided by only those who are ordained and called to serve. Ministry happens everywhere. Too long, didn't read, and frankly looks like something that's not really for a newcomer. Sounds like it's more for the folks who are already there. You know, she's kind of catching some of these kids' faces at the bottom, and that's nice. You know, it kind of reminds her of the church that she knew growing up, but it doesn't really seem like this is really visitor-oriented. She's not really sure that she's going to be able to find people she could connect with here. So she's looks at the looking for community for your family. That's what this picture is here, right? And then she realizes, I don't have a family at the moment, so that's not really that helpful for me. What about that stuff I saw at the parade? That seemed pretty cool. I don't see any of that here. She scrolls back up and taps this first-time visitor button that's right there. Just to, it's a really long BART ride. Okay, so she's going to read a little bit more. She taps first-time visitor. She reads, "We need not think alike to love alike. Most of the members of UUCB were not born UU. Ours is a chosen faith. We come from many other faith traditions and from no religion at all. We come of searching answers to the question." Paige is, it's not bad, but it's not getting her. It's not making an emotional connection. It's kind of neutral. It's a little wordy. She scrolls down, sees the plan your visit, and clicks through, and sees that, in fact, we're a little bit off the beaten path. Emma doesn't have a car. And so she looks at the map, and she sighs, and it looks far from where she is, and she gives up. She's losing her motivation to continue to explore her relationship with UUCB. And that's Emma's journey. That's Emma's journey. Get comfortable with the fact that not everybody who you come into contact with is going to like you. That's okay. That's why we have to come into contact with more people. So let's talk a little bit about what we could have done to improve Emma's experience. So again, turn to someone near you, maybe someone different this time, and spend a couple minutes. What could we have done to improve Emma's experience with the UU Church of Berkeley, either online and or in person? And a hush fell over the crowd. Hush. See, wasn't that nice? I borrowed that from Youth Caucus. Okay. How could we have improved Emma's experience? I'm going to take a couple comments. Raise your hand, call on you. I'll repeat into the mic. Yes. So a QR code on the flyer might have taken Emma to something that was more targeted for her. I would say yes, although you could achieve the same thing with a targeted URL, like if it was uucb.org/march, if they're talking about the march. Right, so so think about where you're sending people and what that experience is going to be. Yes, very good. Yes?
Brevity.
Get to the point. Do you know how long you have to make an impression on someone when they land on your webpage? It's 7 seconds. 7 seconds. We are not a 7 second people. Not yet. I love that. That's right. Okay, right here. Yes.
Something to pique her curiosity about
the place. Okay, so some kind of hook to pique her curiosity about the place. That would be good to want to learn more. Yes. So, paying attention to language, and we can get hung up on language, which I don't want us to do, but I want us to understand that we all have different references, right? And so when we use insider language, people know what that is, right? They see it, they get it, and they know that that feels exclusionary to them, right? Paying attention to language, yes, absolutely. So better ways to help people get to your church and being clear about what that is. Also, you don't have to do everything at your church. Just saying.
And I'll add to that that the Berkeley Church's site, after the map that looks like they're in the middle of nowhere, they have bus directions. They talk about how easy it actually is to get there, even though they appear to be in the middle of nowhere. But Emma didn't make it past the map that looked like the middle of nowhere.
That's right.
So it's something to think about how you order the order that you present things to people in if you are remote.
That's an excellent point. Yes, Abby. Abby.
The pictures are like for her generation, it's the Tinder generation, it's not the eHarmony generation, so the pictures have to be much more upfront. They have to be like not just like 80 people behind a banner that was taken by the church photographer, but like an up close picture of two people having an engaging conversation or some picture that like makes you feel like you want to be in there having that conversation, not like you want to stand with those 80 people while being
Yeah, so the importance of images, right? And the more we use social media, the more that Facebook and Instagram are driving us to expect better pictures, higher quality pictures, pictures where you can see the emotion on folks' face that make you want to start a conversation with them or meet them, not the group shot from the annual congregational photo. That's better than just having a picture of your building, but we can still do better.
You can see yes. That on UUA.org.
Yes, please tweet that. Yes, I'm sorry. What? Ride sharing. Say more about what a link to some ride sharing. Yeah. So again, helping her see how to get to the congregation is good, but she has to want to get there first, right? So that's good. Yes, two more. Okay. So uploading a video. Videos can be excellent tools. Videos share well on social media. If you post a video on your homepage, people are likely to watch it. We see that on the UUA homepage as well. And when you think about making video, make sure it doesn't have to be amazing, fantastic, expensive production quality, right? But it can't be terrible. And so I've seen some congregational videos that really feel handheld, right? Like they've maybe done with a camera phone and they're funny and they're cute and they have something to say. But if you have a 6-minute video of like background music and scrolling photos, that's not going to cut it. So videos can be a great tool if you can come up with an effective video. Yes. And one more. So the suggestion was have a search engine in which Emma could type in what she's looking for and come up with that. So I think there's some pieces of that are really smart. One is that make sure that you have things on your website that people can get access to that talk about you being a welcoming congregation. It's even better if you can talk about something you did because you were a welcoming congregation, not just that you say you're a welcoming congregation. Just a note about good web design is that people are more likely to browse by topic than they are to search. And if you include all of the good information under the first time visitors tab, a lot of people don't click on that. They instead just go straight to the justice tab or the religious education tab. So make sure that all of your website, you know, at least at the top line pages, they're going to make sense to someone who is not a member of your church. Did you have something over there, sir? Yes, so it's important to have permission to use the photos and video online that you have, yes. And the UUA actually has a sample permission form that you can use, and we'll include a link to that when we send out the slides. Sure, so coming up with decent photos takes some work. And we recommend that you try to be clear about what events there's going to be a photographer at. So plan ahead. Make sure someone has a decent camera who's going to be there and take some good pictures. But you can also use photos that you can find online. Sometimes those are called stock photos. There's also a large number of photos that are what they call Creative Commons that you can find. So those can be great, and be careful that you don't use photos that don't really represent your congregation, if that makes sense, right? So you don't want to set up a weird expectation based on the photos that you're there. So they need to feel authentic. But we can include some links to some good photo search sites as well.
We're going to have some time for questions and discussion at the end, because I know a lot of things are coming up for us. But first, let me introduce you to our third persona. This is David. And these photos are lovely Creative Commons photos from Facebook of some actual guy named David. David is at the cusp of his 40s and 50s. He's a white male, straight, he's a dad, married, working professional, and he's in a multi-faith family. He's half Jewish, half Catholic. He's got scientists and humanist interests. He's a computer guy, he's a geek. Into Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, that fun stuff. And some of David's goals and challenges are raising responsible and happy kids. He's got three kids between the ages of 8 and 13. And he's actually looking for some kind of spiritual and social engagement for the whole family. They are new in the area. They'd been involved in synagogue before. And a synagogue that was accepting of, you know, his half-Jewishness, which didn't quite fit with some Jewish definitions of who fits and who doesn't. But they were engaged, but his daughter has said she just doesn't want to do a bat mitzvah. She wants to do something different. And she's interested in a UU congregation. So, but some of his challenges in life is, like so many parents, he's overextended, and he feels like he's impatient. He just wants like more of a well of patience and more of a sense of peace and not feeling so overextended. And he's also really concerned about consumerism and commodification and what it's doing to the world and to his children. So he brings along some values and fears that are compatible with our faith. He really believes in the right of conscience and the right of people to have their conscience be their guide in matters of principle and values. He playfully draws from Jewish and Christian wisdom. He also believes very strongly in the individuality of children and their individual rights and personalities, including his own children's. And he's fearful of climate change, polarization, hatred, ignorance. But he's got some common objections to UU kind of stuff. As a half-Catholic, half-Jew, a Protestant look and feel isn't quite comfortable to him. And he also gets frustrated with religious communities' poor use of electronic communications and social media. Like, you know, he's been doing websites in HTML since 1993, and if he goes to a website that looks like it's 1997, he's not going to check it out. So, you know, he's looking. He gets out his tablet, and his daughter is interested in a Unitarian Universalism, so he thinks he's going to check it out. So he goes to Google on his tablet. He types in Unitarian Universalist Berkeley, and this is what comes up. you too can have this fun Googling UU or Unitarian and your name, town name, and see what comes up. And for some crazy reason, it shows two congregations that are in like Santa Barbara and Los Angeles in addition to Berkeley on the map. But he ignores that, and he scrolls down on the Google results page, and he sees a number of things. There's a UUCB, there's a Berkeley Fellowship, there's a, Wikipedia article, There's Yelp. The UUCB has 4.5 stars. That's awesome. The Berkeley Fellowship has 2 stars. So he's like, okay, wow, I love Wikipedia. So he feels a feeling of delight seeing that the church has a Wikipedia entry. So he clicks on it. And he starts to read about it, and he sees it's known for spiritual growth and music and learning and social action. And he's like, oh, wow, this is really cool. So without reading the whole article, he goes back to the Google page and finds the Yelp reviews. He's also a big user of Yelp because he feels like he really gets the inside scoop on things. Do you know what Yelp is? Yelp is, it's a website. It's also an app. It is a place where people can write a review about just about anything. And some of us, I had no idea when I was serving a church whether or not my church was on Yelp. I never happened to look. You might look, because there are people out there writing reviews that you may or may not even know about. But he's excited. He sees there are 17 reviews here. There are actual pictures of cool things happening at the congregation. And he scrolls down. He sees an endorsement from Lisa T., who talks about how she's so excited she found it. And they arrived, and she were totally impressed with how they were welcomed, super nice. The people were lovely. Her little boy loved the Sunday school. And so David's like, okay, this is awesome. The review actually ends, go Unitarian Universalists. So then he goes back, and he checks out the main page of the UU Church of Berkeley's website. And he sees they have scrolling pictures. So each of these people has seen a different picture when they've gone to it. And he sees theme for June, possibility. Ooh, that's kind of cool. And he scrolls down more, and his eyes are immediately caught by the same thing that turned off Emma, which was looking for community for your family. And he clicks on that. And it talks about family community. And this is he's like, wow, because this is a long page. There's all this stuff here. What stands out to him looking at this page is activities for families, and then down the part you can't see, all ages worship, children and youth programs. And then he taps it to get to the family community page. I'm repeating myself. So then he scrolls up to the top of the page because he's like, okay, this is awesome. Family stuff, great. So he's feeling just delight. And then he clicks on learning, and he sees under there, he's looking for the programs for children and youth. He wants to find out about their teenager programs. And he sees all these ways to engage there, including in the menu, it says humanist connections. And he's like, whoa, that's super. That's going to fit me. So he goes to children and youth, and he sees that they have programs on Sunday morning, and they have classes, and there's all these family events listed on the right side. And he scrolls down, he reads about coming of age and our whole lives. And you can scroll down to the youth part. He is just more and more convinced. Even he's not reading every word of this. He's not, because very few people read. People read 38% of what's on a web page at most. But he is coming away with this feeling that there is so much here for his family. There is so much here. He's going to check it out. So he goes up to the top and he clicks on taps on the direction link, and wants to figure out how to get there. He scrolls down, and actually on this view it doesn't look like it's so much in the middle of nowhere. And he sees, wow, right there they have the information about the special events that are upcoming on the right column and the next service. So he has all the information he needs to engage right there. And so he puts a visit on his calendar and goes to talk to his family about it.
David decides to visit. Let's get UU Church of Berkeley a round of applause for getting a visitor in the house. And we've succeeded with David. So we want to talk now a little bit about what David's in-person visit might be like. And we want to pay the same level of attention to David's experience visiting as we have to his experience online, keeping in mind that each of those online experiences that we spent a couple minutes talking through could have happened in about 45 seconds, right? So again, right, those emotional connections are so important, and they happen really fast, and we want to do the best we can to anticipate where we can make those connections and avoid things that are going to be really problematic for people and create obstacles. So we're talking about a couple of the things that you need to pay attention to in your congregation for folks who have made up their minds that they're going to come check you out, right? Very few people roll up off the street. Most folks have already checked out your website. They've seen you in the community. They've already gone through that whole first part of the spectrum of relationship. Thank you. And so now, right, we're a couple steps in. They're coming to visit you. So first, finding. Can they find your congregation? That's on your website, but that's also your signage. A lot of our congregations in the suburbs are not visible from the street. So is it clear where, if you're driving, how you can turn in, right? When they turn in to your congregation or you walk up the street, is it clear where you can park, right? Most congregations are okay with this. I haven't experienced a real challenge here, but sometimes it's been a little difficult. Entering. When you enter, is it clear where to go in the door? Sarah shared this story about her congregation where you couldn't even figure out how to get in the door. I've had this experience at least half a dozen times. I've literally walked around the entire building trying to figure out where it was appropriate for me to go in. And all you need is a sign that says, entrance that way. Not that hard. First impression. So you find that door. You don't just walk around the building and get so frustrated that you leave, which I'm sure happens sometimes. You walk in the door. You roll in the door. What's the first thing that you see? What are those first impressions of the space? What do you see? What do you hear? Do you smell something? Does it smell like old church? Does it smell like, you know what I'm talking about? Does it smell like flowers? Does it smell, what are you smelling? What are you sensing? All five senses. What is there to touch, right? How does the overall space feel? So as you move in, does it feel like a place that has been taken care of, that has been invested in, where there is art and excitement and delight and surprise and beauty? Or does it feel like a little bit dingy and run down? And what does that say about how the people who are there feel about their community? What kind of information is specifically directed at David? What kinds of wayfinding signs are there? Does it say sanctuary this way? Does he know what a sanctuary is? David probably knows, but maybe not everybody does. Is it clear where the bathrooms are and what gender those bathrooms are? When he gets into the service, is it clear where he could sit or should sit? So there's a lot, you know, we do, most of the congregations that I have attended Sunday services for have some kind of welcoming script for visitors, and so that also factors into, you know, it's usually at the beginning, welcome to our congregation. Maybe we say we're an LGBTQ welcoming congregation. You know, for those of you who have congregations that strongly encourage everyone to turn off their blankety-blank phones, just consider that some of us like to tweet about the wonderful things that you're talking about on Sunday morning. So in my congregation, we say put your phone on worship mode, whatever that means. Next. The connection and interaction. Who talks to David? Who doesn't talk to David? How's the physical space arranged such that, you know, I hope he's not like tripping over people to try to get to sit down. What about his kids? Is it clear where they go? Are they expected to be there for the whole service? Do they go down to the RE question, to the RE wing? What's an RE wing? Next one. Right, the flow of the event. So not only what happens when he enters, but then what's the sequence going to be? Usually this is covered by the order of service, but it's not always clear when you're expected to stand up or sit down, right? Especially if you grew up Catholic, that's a piece. And so what's going to be, you know, what comes next, how long? Some people cover some of this on their website, and I think that's helpful to establish good expectations about what you can expect on a Sunday morning. And finally, of course, what's the content of an event? And I've been talking like this is a Sunday morning service, but this could be any event that your congregation hosts, and it doesn't have to be at your building. All of these things are important to consider. And so the major factors, what's the sermon that week, right? If you have a stewardship Sunday in which you're encouraging people to up their pledges to the church, maybe that's not the best Sunday to invite visitors, right? So if you're going to be explicitly trying to push visitors to come to a Sunday service, make sure it's one that they're really going to appreciate. So we'd love for you to talk to the folks around you and ask one another, what's one thing that your congregation does well in the list, and I'll put the list back up, of experiences for visitors, and what's one thing that you could work on, right? What's one thing your congregation does well, what's one thing you could work on? Take a few minutes. Okay, and a hush fell over the crowd. Hush. What do you do well? What do you do well? Raise a hand. What do you do well? Greeting. Excellent. Yes. Designated greeters. That's good. What else?
We ask people to introduce themselves, right?
Before joys and concerns. You ask people to introduce themselves. I've heard mixed opinions on how great that is. Because for some people, that's like, wow, you really welcome me. And for some people, it's like a little much. And I don't have enough time to talk about joys and concerns today. But there are two camps to the joys and concerns question, and I see both sides. And I was just talking to my colleague Erica Hewitt, who's the Worship Web coordinator, who suggested she might do an entire workshop on joys and concerns next year at GA. So I'll tell her to do that.
I have a
yes.
concern about that. I'd like to light a candle.
You wear your name tags. Oh, excellent, right? That implies that we don't already all know each other so much that you're not welcome here. Yes. Okay, so you've got someone meeting folks with children to clarify what's going on with RE. Yeah, that can be helpful. Yes, Dad. So a great, big, beautiful sign at the First UU Church in Columbus, Ohio. Do not underestimate the importance of a big, easy-to-read sign. Yes?
We have a TV screen that's in the front hall right by the door, and it runs a PowerPoint deck that gets updated like every month with service topics and special events and pictures.
Oh, that's nice. So you've got a screen that runs a slide talking about upcoming events and what's going on in the church. That's really helpful. That's great. I like that. Yes? So, small congregation, you go out to lunch afterwards, and new visitors, you buy them lunch. So, I'm not going to ask you what you need to work on, because you know what you need to work on. But I do just want to spend a second talking about coffee hour. This comic reads, after service coffee, this is British, so it says, after service coffee, this is the time when newcomers can get to know the congregation. So this is one version of a coffee hour fail. Is when someone takes the visitor mug that you put out for them and then no one talks to them. I have had this experience. I have talked to others who have this experience, right? Because coffee hour is when we get to see our friends. So if you're going to have a coffee hour, please make sure that at least a couple folks are going to intentionally introduce themselves to people they don't know. But coffee hour can also go the other way and can be a little intense at mobbing the new person. Have any of you seen this coffee hour caution poster before? So we created this at the UUA with suggestions of things not to say, specifically to young adults that are visiting your church, but it's good advice for everyone. How old are you? Are you new here? No, I've been going here for 10 years. You just never met me before. When are you planning to have kids? We need more young people. Have you met our other young adult? So, just as an aside, we created this poster. It got thousands of shares on Facebook. It was been adapted by folks in Methodist congregations and Quaker meetings, and so we included things to say instead of these marginalizing, you know, semi-offensive things to say, like "What did you think of the service?" or "I don't know that we've met. My name is," or "It's great to meet you." Not that hard. But I know a young adult who went to a congregation. that she'd not attended before, and talked to someone at coffee hour who gave her, in sequence, each of these six suggested terms. Which is to say that they are suggestions, but you can be yourself, right? And sometimes we just get a little hung up on the, you know, the rules of coffee hour. And it's just better to be friendly and be open and try to check your assumptions and go from there. We don't need to mob people. We don't need to ignore people. We're just trying to be, you know, friendly. So that's my message about coffee hour. I want you to remember, taking away from this, that the overall experience is more important than the details. The emotions are more important than the text and the language, right? The impact is more important than the intent. So the details we've been talking about here, again, are not to be taken and used in sequence exactly the way that we talked about them, but we're to demonstrate the intention and the care that you want to take with how new people experience your congregation. The details serve to create an overall emotional connection, but they are not that emotional connection all by themselves. We have a couple of great tools that you're going to want to avail yourself of, including the website template, which is the same template that the U Church of Berkeley used. And so that's available to you. We also have some guidelines on visual design and colors and language and use of logos. Those are our branding guidelines. We have email templates and suggestions about how to organize your email communications. We have great pamphlets to hand out. And we've been working on, as Sarah said, a promotional toolkit for how to use social media and other ways to promote your congregation in the community.
And the promotional toolkit includes tools for developing personas as well as
that's
detailed
right.
sample
Thank you
personas
for noting that.
That you can use.
So that's all available at uua.org/outreach, or if you give us your email on the sign-up sheet, we'll make sure to include that.
Carrie could go search for the sign-up sheet while I summarize where we have been.
Actually,
today.
Can you just raise your hand if you have the sign-up sheet near you? One here, and we had two. We'll make sure you can sign up here at the table also. You can start a new one. Any way you want to give us your email address is okay.
So if there's one big thing we want you to remember about today... about our discussions today. It's about learning how to see yourselves like someone who's looking from the outside in, how to see your congregation with the eyes of someone looking from the outside in and not just with your own eyes looking from the inside out. And user experience is a tool that can help you get there and can help you build empathy and evaluate the emotional experiences that people may be having with your congregation. And we want you to remember, too, that it's emotions that form those connections. And that by paying attention to this user journey, the experiences that they have, and that visitor experience, and using some of the outreach tools that we have, you can really transform the way that people are able to build those relationships with you and become connected with your congregation all along the spectrum of faithful engagement. This is all about building a relationship, and a relationship with amazing, unique people with gifts and hopes and fears of their own, people who have not yet made a connection with our life-giving faith, but people for whom that connection can be so life-giving. That is what we are here for, and that is what we are so grateful that you have come to talk about with us and learn with us so that we can change lives. Thank you.